Good evening. Welcome to the webinar, How to Beat Burnout in the New Ways of Working. So the last year has been incredibly difficult for most of us. Some of the members of our teams have been redeployed for different periods of time, perhaps twice now, often outside their own comfort zone. But even if they haven't, seeing patients in the ophthalmology clinic's been really different. All those thoughts about what's the correct PPE, patients who are very nervous and don't want to come, perhaps limited options about what we can offer them in treatment or surgery. So it made me think, how do you feel about work at the moment? So before COVID, what was it that we found rewarding about our work? What did we enjoy most? I think ophthalmologists are generally a pretty happy bunch at work and feel fairly fulfilled. And I think the healthcare professionals that work alongside us generally feel the same too. So what is it that might make us feel rewarded or conversely burnt out and stressed at the moment? Who does develop burnout? Well, that was a question that my colleague, Melanie Corbett, who's the chair of education at the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, asked. She wanted to have a team looking after mid-careers and seniors to have a lead for this, and she did a pilot survey. And what she found is that as you became more senior, the non-clinical roles seemed to enhance your working life and make you happier. And interestingly, that increased with age or time. So that made me wonder, are these extra roles that we do protective in some way? Or is it that the people who are more resilient take on the extra roles? I don't know the answer to that. I don't even know if Rachel's going to answer that when we're talking this evening. But it does make me interested as to whether that's affecting how we feel now. I mean, quite a lot of things change as we get more senior in our careers. Our manual dexterity is vital in our precision subject, but actually changes as we get older. So perhaps it is that we need to think about what we can do well as we get older and what other roles we can do and diversify and play to our strengths. So one of the things that I found very helpful was knowing a little bit more about how I work in teams and what makes me tick. I'm looking forward now to hearing from Dr. Rachel Morris. So Rachel started as a GP, has lots of experience in the NHS, and I've been listening to her podcasts, You Are Not a Frog, throughout the year since COVID began. And she has a really interesting series of guests. And I think really helps to help us thrive under the pressure that we're going through at the moment. And Rachel's also a resilience specialist coach for doctors and healthcare professionals. And she's had leadership roles as the director of leadership courses for Red Whale. And she's also been a tutor for the University of Cambridge postgraduate certificate in medical education. So she's had lots of roles that have given her expertise in this.
Thank you so much. It's really lovely to be with you. I'm very honoured that you have opted to spend an hour of your very busy, precious time with us. So like Fiona was saying, I'm Rachel Morris. I'm a GP. I've got over 20 years of experience in the NHS. I have a variety of different roles, including working with the University of Cambridge, a large GP training company called Red Whale, and I created my own training course around resilience for healthcare professionals called the Shapes course, based on stuff that I learned as I was training as a coach that have been really, really helpful for me. And I also host the You Are Not a Frog podcast, which I really, really enjoy. And that's for healthcare professionals and other busy people in high stress jobs. So do check that out if you're into podcasts. So you're very, very welcome here if you're working in healthcare and you're feeling a bit overwhelmed by the demands expected of you. If you feel that you're using all your strength really just to survive the day job sometime, and you may also feel like you're a little bit on the edge and perhaps a crisis away from not coping. And I think we're all, Fiona and I was chatting just before the webinar, I think we're all just exhausted at the moment, and our get up and go has got up and gone a little bit. And I think we're really reaching quite a low patch at the moment. There's a lot of fatigue around. And so welcome to you. If you do wish you could enjoy going to work like you used to, and if you know that there must be a better option than burning out or leaving your job, and I certainly think that there are better options. So I'd love to know this, and I think we've got a Slido poll coming. How many of you have been worried at some point in your career about your own level of stress and burnout? And I think that's going to come to you. And Fiona, is that something that you've experienced in your career?
Yes, I think it is, Rachel. I think there are times when you're doing so many things and the demands feel so great that you feel like you can't stop for a minute to think. And even though I'm quite an outgoing and positive person, there are times when I felt, goodness, you know, what's coming next?
Yeah, yeah. And have we got any results on the Slido poll yet?
So we do, and that's a resounding 90%, I think, varying around between 82 and 90%. So the answers are a resounding yes. The great majority of people out there have actually felt worried about their own stress.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's consistent with the evidence that we see. Now, there's been lots of studies, one in the BJGP back in 2019, so before the coronavirus pandemic, saying that 94% of GPs are suffering from mild or severe exhaustion. And this was a quote I had from a doctor: by the end of the day, I'm emotionally battered, using all my strength, mental energy to survive, sort of clinging to the desk for dear life. And I'm sure a lot of you can identify with that quote. Now, throughout coronavirus, 37%, I think these were quite early statistics, I'm sure it's more than that, of adults said the coronavirus pandemic has affected their well-being, and people are feeling more and more stressed and anxious about work than they used to. And there's a GMC report, Caring for Doctors, Caring for Patients, again before coronavirus, saying that actually a lot of doctors, and it was up there with 94% for GPs, were exhausted, mildly or extremely exhausted. So, you know, that was before coronavirus. You know, if those figures were done again on doctors around the coronavirus pandemic, I'd be very interested to see what the results are there. Now, there are some very specific COVID stresses alongside the worry about keeping ourselves and our patients and our families safe. We're putting a lot of pressure on ourselves to make smart, safe choices in the face of massive uncertainty. And nobody actually knows what the right thing to do is going to be. So we're so worried about doing the right thing, but actually we don't really know what that is. And a lot of our usual coping mechanisms, such as, well, going to the gym, we can't even go out for a coffee with our mates at the moment, that they've gone. So we're having to find other ways of staying well. And sometimes we're feeling that because we're at home so much, we actually ought to be doing all these extra things, you know, getting different hobbies, sorting out the house, painting this or that or whatever. But actually, we do forget that we're in the middle of a crisis. Add in always being on, and by say always being on, I mean on a screen quite a lot of the time. Even if you are seeing patients on the front line, we're still taking part much more in virtual meetings, aren't we? Some of us who are not going into work, maybe might be shielding, or we might be doing a lot of our work from home, maybe working from home, or as I like to call it, living at work. And that brings with it its own difficulties, such as homeschooling. I've got three kids at home, and just behind that door, that is my home life and this is my work life. And so there's a very difficult balance between the two. We might be caring for others, and there are so many new processes that we've had to adopt in the new ways of working. And I've already talked about the anxiety of not knowing what's going to be happening in the future, not knowing if the decisions we're making are right or even what the right decision is. So many of us at the moment are reaching empty. Okay, our tanks are empty. And, you know, that GMC report, even before COVID, said medicine's a tough job. We make it far harder by neglecting the simple basics and caring for doctors' well-being. And I think one of the good things about the pandemic is that it has brought the importance of well-being to the fore. And now there's an awful lot more out there than there used to be. And that's really good. But we need to know that we need to access it, and we need to ask for the help and seek out the help that we need, because it's not right that doctors and other healthcare workers are feeling intense strain. It's not right that we don't feel that we can look after ourselves in the way that we'd like to look after our patients. And, you know, it's not right that we feel that we're running like a hamster on a wheel, going as fast as we can just to stay still. So I'm going to talk you through a few strategies that can help. But first of all, I'd like to introduce you to the Yerkes-Dodson curve, which I'm sure many of you will have seen before. So this is a very simple graph with pressure on the x-axis and performance on the y-axis. And it basically shows us what happens to our bodies and our minds under increasing pressure. So what happens to our performance? Now, we all need a little bit of pressure to perform. I know I need a few deadlines to get anything done. So as the pressure increases, our performance goes up and up and up. Now, at some point, we reach peak performance. It would be brilliant, wouldn't it, if our performance kept going up and up and up. It doesn't work like that. Unfortunately, at some point, you start to go down the curve. So at some point, you reach peak performance, but then you start to slip down. Your performance starts to suffer. You may be getting ill. You might be affecting the performance of other people as well. You know, there was a study that talked about GPs under pressure. They talked about the fact that they were a bit like frogs in boiling water, that they were working harder and harder, but the pan had been heating up very, very slowly. And so they've only got two choices, either burn out or get out the pan. But I genuinely believe that there are other ways. Okay, you don't need to leave your job. You don't need to get ill with stress. And that's where You Are Not a Frog comes in. And that's my podcast. And we have lots and lots of different hacks for, you know, actually surviving and actually even thriving at work. And some of the tools that I like to use are the Shapes toolkits. And these are tools, like I said before, that I've collected along the way as I've gone along that have been really helpful to me and that I've used in my coaching and training with people. And so I'd just like to share with you today a few of these tools and some principles that I hope will help you maybe get a little bit back towards area two in that curve rather than feel like you're slipping on down. Because I think, you know, there's lots of things that we can do, but sometimes we just need to access a little bit of help and something really practical. Now, this was another quote I got from GPs when I was thinking about my training. They felt that they have all the responsibility and none of the control. And so I want to start off with talking about a mindset shift that's been a complete game changer for me. So let me talk about this mindset shift. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen the Matrix films, one of my favourite films. And in the Matrix, a very brief overview is it's in the set in the future. The world has been taken over by machines and they feed off humans to keep them going. But in order to feed off humans, they've got to keep their minds busy and they plug all the humans into this virtual environment called the Matrix. And they all the humans are basically living in some virtual reality world. Okay. Now, Keanu Reeves is living in this virtual reality world. He knows nothing about the machines, but there are some humans that have escaped and they go back into the virtual reality world to try and rescue him. And they say to him, "You don't know what's going on, but we're going to give you a choice. And there are two pills in front of you. If you take the blue pill, you'll carry on living in blissful ignorance. If you take the red pill, you're going to learn about the difficult truth. The problem is, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it." So that's what I'm going to be talking to you today. It's a little bit of a difficult truth, but it's been a game changer for me. And once you've seen this, it's very difficult to unsee. And this is all about the zone of power. Now, if you think about things you can't control, I can't control the weather. I can't control the coronavirus pandemic. I can't control the government's response to the coronavirus pandemic. I can't control what you think of me. I can't control what Fiona's going to say. What can I control? Well, I can control what I say now. I can control how I prepared for this webinar. I can control the sorts of conversations I have, how I spend my time, what I choose to do, when I choose to work, how I respond to things. So all these things are inside my zone of power. Now, I'm sure you know some people that spend their whole time feeling very stressed and reacting against stuff that's completely outside of their control. You know, reacting about patient demand, patient's expectations, what someone else has said, what someone else thinks. They're just going to get very, very stressed because they've got no control over that sort of thing. If you focus on what's in your zone of power, what is in your control, what you can do, you're going to be much, much more powerful and much more productive. And this is very simply the serenity prayer. You know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, courage to change the things I can, and then the wisdom to know the difference. So if you do feel stuck with something, then the first thing I suggest you do is maybe get a blank bit of paper, draw a circle in the middle and think to yourself, okay, what's in my control? What's in my power? Think to yourself, what's outside of my control? What's outside my power? Maybe write everything that's outside of your control. And then think to yourself, actually, what choices do I have in this situation? And what will I do differently? And that can help get you unstuck, because if you start to think to yourself, okay, what else could I do? You'll then start to know how you can move things forward. So we're going to think about four areas now in which you can start to take control of all these things that are causing us stress and are causing us to feel so exhausted. And the first thing is taking control of your well-being. Now, is this making sense so far, Fiona? Just checking in with you. And if we have any questions.
It is indeed. And I was just about to leap in and say, before you tell us about the vortex, one of the questions that's come up is, do you think stress is also about personality as well as about your job role?
That's a very interesting question. One of the great things about resilience is that I do believe resilience is a skill that you can learn, or resilience is a collection of several skills that you can learn. It's a bit like communication. We used to think communication was all about personality. It's not. It's a skill that you can learn. But there's no doubt that some people are probably a little bit innately better at it, if you see what I mean. So I think there are maybe some people that have a personality that causes them to worry about things a lot, or maybe causes them to get stressed quicker. However, the good news is you can learn how to manage it. And I also think that even if you are having a very high innate level of resilience, if you get put in a toxic environment, in a toxic workplace, and enough pressure is put on you, you will eventually burn out and show signs of stress. So the answer to that question is yes and no. Does that make sense? And would you agree?
Yes, I think that makes perfect sense, because I think that actually we do develop skills as we go along that are different from the ones we start to need in our job. Perhaps as we become more senior, for example, there are things that we have to learn to manage. And I think that I've seen lots of trainees become increasingly resilient.
Yeah. And it does come with experience as well. The depressing fact is that the best way to learn resilience is to go through hard times, unfortunately. So not that I would wish hard times on anyone, but it does actually develop your resilience the quickest, interestingly, because you just learn from it. You learn from what you've experienced, don't you? So let me talk to you about the vortex of busyness. Now, a few years ago, I was developing a course. We had to get a handbook in, there was a publishing deadline, had to write several articles in a very short space of time. So I started putting my children into extra childcare. I started staying up really late to finish the work. I stopped going to my exercise classes. I stopped seeing my friends for coffee. And very soon I noticed that I was starting to wake up really early in the morning with all the work going through my head, even though I really loved what I was doing. And I was starting to feel a bit shaky and a bit like, oh, is this all there is to life? And I realised just before, luckily in time, that I'd started to go down the vortex of busyness. And unfortunately, at the bottom of the vortex of busyness is burnout. You see, the problem is, I think as doctors and professionals working in healthcare, our response to the workload building up is just to work harder and harder. It's what we've done all our lives. But what we do is we tend to give up the things that re-energise us. So what I'd like to know from you guys watching the webinar is, when the workload builds up, what's the first thing that re-energizes you that you stop doing in order to make time for the work? So for me, I stop doing exercise, and I stop connecting with the people I know I'm really going to enjoy connecting with. What do you do, Fiona? What things do you give up first?
Oh, well, I've already typed in that I stop walking up hills, because that's a little bit longer than just walking around the park. And actually, it's what makes me feel really good. It somehow makes me feel much more grounded and connected and joyous. So why I give that up, I've no idea.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because I think we've just been, it's been drilled into us that we just keep going and going and going. And, you know, it, And we don't take breaks and we don't do all those things that help us switch off and re-energise and all those sorts of things. What I'd like people to do now is rate how important that thing is to them. So is it A, very important, B, quite important, or C, not that important? So that would be really useful. And we'll work out how important those things are. Because just a reminder, at the bottom of the vortex of busyness is burnout. And burnout is characterised by three main things. Firstly, a lack of empathy for other people. You might become increasingly cynical about your patients, about your colleagues, about your job. You may feel exhausted. So it's characterised by complete exhaustion. And then a feeling of poor performance or actual poor performance. It generally starts with you think you're performing badly and then turns out you genuinely are. So, you know, burnout is really severe. And I know from signing people off for years as a GP that if you reach the stage of burnout, it takes months to recover. Okay, whereas if you catch it early at the sort of stress stage, then you can maybe do something about it. But burnout, often you've got to take several months, weeks, the months off, and you've got to really recuperate. So what can we do about this? Well, quite simply, we need to put in those ways to well-being in our life. So these are my 8 ways to well-being. They're based on the 5 ways to well-being that's on the government website, which are the top 5, and then 3 at the bottom. And I'm not going to teach you to suck eggs in this webinar because most of us know what to do. It's just we don't actually do it. And I guess what I would say is that thing that you gave up, that you give up when the workload's too hard, to when the work's built up, put it in your diary and do it in the next week. So if you do one thing from this webinar, do that thing. Particularly during COVID, there are 3 things I would say is particularly important. And I know most people say they give up exercise. So staying active is so important for your physical well-being and your mental well-being. And I know it's difficult when you're sat in clinics or, you know, or just online. You've got to plan how you're going to be active. And even just a 3 or 4 minute online dance workout in the middle of your day can be great. I've actually taken to, if I have a phone call to make, if possible, I'll try and not do it on Zoom. I'll try and get on my headphones and walk around the park near me whilst I talk. And that's really, really helpful for me. You must take breaks, right? So when you're focusing on something, your brainwaves are very linear. And you are in deep focus mode. Now, when you have a break, what happens to your brain is you go into diffuse mode where your connections go across the different hemispheres and the brain starts to work on solving problems. Okay, so when your brain is switched off and you're making yourself a cup of tea or you're looking out the window, doing a bit of meditation or whatever, your brain will be solving the problem that you were working on. So you will genuinely be more productive if you take more breaks. Okay. And then finally, connecting with people. So important, particularly now when we're all feeling a little bit isolated, and connecting with people who build you up, who care about you, who re-energize you, is the number one resiliency protective factor. And you've got to think about that, because quite often those people that re-energize you, they're not the people that are demanding to speak to you. So you have to be a bit intentional about how you do that. I'm going to talk a little bit more about connecting in a little while. But you can do this with your teams. And I think that what I've seen with managers and teams during coronavirus, particularly in healthcare, is when the crisis hit last March, everyone was worried about how everyone was. So it was constantly doing team check-ins and how you're doing and what you need. And then gradually, as things have gone on and we've had to massively change the way we work, the team check-ins have turned into all about process and we've forgotten to check in about well-being. So here's a very simple 5-minute check-in chat that you can do with your team. So how are you? How are you really? You know, what are you worried about? Everyone goes around and says that. And then what's going well? So getting a bit of positivity can be very helpful because it can help you focus on some of the things that are actually going really well. And then thinking about what is it you need? What do you really need? And often just sharing that is really helpful. You don't need to fix it all if you're the team leader. Just being able to share it is important enough. And other people in the team may jump in and be able to fix it. So that's a 5-minute check-in chat. And I have lots of resources around that if you would like them later. So I've talked a little bit about well-being. The second thing is taking control of your time. Now, I think this is really important because whenever I talk to healthcare professionals about well-being, the biggest barrier to their well-being is busyness and lack of time. So unless you get your time sorted out, you're not going to be able to get to those wellbeing factors. So this is a complete game changer. And, you know, we are all busy at work, aren't we? And we feel that actually we don't have time to do what we need to do in the time allocated to us. And often that's true. So I often use the prioritisation grid to talk to people about how they manage their time. And I just want to put a caveat on this, is I am not trying to tell you how to fit more and more into your already overscheduled day. What I'm telling you is you probably need to fit less into your overscheduled day and drop some things out of it, okay? But then it's very difficult to know what to drop and how we do that. So you might want to use the prioritisation grid, which is the urgent important matrix made famous, I think, by President Eisenhower. He used this. And in the training that we do, we fill this in, which can be very helpful, work out a to-do list. And you might want to do this after the webinar. So just literally draw a cross in the middle of a sheet of paper and brainstorm your to-do list into these different boxes. And what you'll find is that the urgent important box, there'll be loads of stuff in there. You'll find that there's quite a bit, but maybe not so much in the urgent but not important box. Normally that's sort of stuff that other people want you to do that's important to them but not to you. In the bottom right, you'll find stuff that's not important or urgent, which you probably just need to get rid of. And in the top right hand box, this is stuff that's not urgent but is very important. And that's really where your zone of power lies, in getting to some of that stuff that's not really, really urgent, but it's important. Because what I have found is that if you leave the stuff that's important and you don't plan to get to it, it then becomes urgent at a later date. So, for example, I'm always up at 4 a.m. doing the paperwork for my appraisal, even though I've known for a year that it's coming, because I just haven't got to it. And I'm sure you can all think of things that you leave, like maybe staffing issues, not dealing with them at the time, you leave them too long and then suddenly a crisis comes up. So that's one thing that you can do. Now, just going to go back, because in those bottom two boxes, you've got all that stuff that's not important. And we spend an awful lot of time at work. In fact, the Stephen Covey Foundation found out that we spend 30 to 40% of our time at work on stuff that's not important. Okay, so that gives us a chance to get rid of it if we can. So if we can eliminate it, eliminate it. If we can automate it, let's automate it. And that might be simply setting up macros or email auto replies, or just getting a protocol or a form that you just cut and paste all the time that you can use, or being able to delegate to somebody. Now, this doesn't take, you know, delegation is not a quick, easy thing to do. You'll have to spend some time planning to do that. But delegation is your friend, and we all need to learn to delegate a little bit more. Now, if you want to learn a little bit more about how to eliminate and automate and delegate, there's a great book called Essentialism that I'm going to show you in a minute, because Greg McKeown says most of us are doing too much. And the strapline of Essentialism is do fewer things, but better. And I love that. And it's been really, really helpful to me. So how do we do less? Well, prioritising three things every day can be very, very helpful. So what are the three things that you have to get done today? And then improving our focus a little bit, because many, many of us have all these distractions all the time. And if you're in deep work and you get distracted, it will take you 23 minutes to get back in to the work that you were doing. So even just an email popping into the top of your screen, or a WhatsApp message on your phone or something like that, will distract you. So the number one thing I would suggest is just turn off all your email notifications from your screen, turn your notifications off from your phone, and just try and limit all those interruptions. Go where you can't be found if you've got a deep project to do, if you need to get into some deep work. Emails can be a big problem, and many of us feel the compulsion to check them up to 10 times a day. But actually, the evidence is if you're checking your emails an awful lot, what's happening is you're getting the stress of them, but you're not really getting to them or answering them. So actually, can you just check your emails twice, three times a day, and set aside time for doing them so you can answer them when you do it? I find with emails that if something's urgent, you'll hear about it in another way. And then doing your best work at your best time. So most of us are our best first thing in the morning, but what do? We turn on our computer and we do our emails. Actually, that's a low quality concentration task. You could do that after lunch. do your deep project for an hour first thing in the morning, and you'll, if you can, if you're not in clinic or doing a ward round or something like that, and you'll find you'll get an awful lot more done. And then a final quick productivity hack is batching. So being able to do all of one task at one time. So writing all your referral letters at one time, or doing test results at one time, or something like that can be very, very helpful. And there's a load of other productivity hacks, but there's lots of things that we can do. And there's a really good book actually that I've read recently, I'm just looking for it, called Make Time. It's just fantastic. And there's so many things that I've learned from that, including taking my emails off my phone and deleting all my social media from my phone, which has reduced my screen time by 81%. Amazing, which has meant that I've actually had time to do other stuff. Would any of those sort of productivity hacks work in the ophthalmology world, Fiona?
I'm sure they would. Quite a lot of us do virtual clinic or review of data. And I totally agree with you. You sit down, you get yourself organised, all the other distractions gone. It's incredible how quickly you can get through that work compared to when you're opening your emails and the phone goes and somebody comes in to ask you something. But I was also thinking that I think it's quite hard sometimes for us to delegate because we don't want to necessarily feel like we're burdening other people. And at the same time, we also think it'll be quicker if we do it. And that makes me think about the fact that for years I didn't do things I for the children, I did them rather than teaching them to do them because it was quicker. And then I worked out that was really counterproductive in the long run. And it's a little bit like that. I now try to think of delegating as actually developing people's skills so that I'm better at doing it.
Yeah, 100%. Delegation is so important. It is always quicker to do it yourself the first time. And then you get to the second time, and but by the 10th time, it's probably not quicker to do it by yourself because someone else would have done it for you. So delegation is a superpower, but it takes time, and you have to plan how you're going to do it. You have to check it. You have to, you know, there's all these processes that you have to do, but it is worth it. So this is a book that, you know, I read every year. I think it's really helpful, and I think everyone in healthcare should read it. You know, Discipline, Pursuit of Less, Focus on the Essentials. And there are three truths they talk about. The first one is I choose to. You know, you have so many different choices about how you spend your time. But just remember that everything you say yes to means that you're giving an unconscious no to something else because you won't have time to do it. And really, there are only a few things that really matter. And yes, you can do anything, 100%, but you can't do everything. You can't do everything. So you're going to need to choose and make some choices about what's important to you in life. So the other thing about time management, I think, is really planning your diary, because I think that as doctors and other professionals working in healthcare, it's very easy to have 100 different projects and loads of different roles. You know, many of us are in clinic and then we're chairing this committee and we're writing these guidelines and we're doing this research and blah, blah, blah. And you know, if you actually mapped it all out, you'd be quite surprised. And I remember somebody I was coaching, she was a GP sort of working in the West Country, and she said, I just want to have a day off. And I said, OK. She said, I should be able to because I'm a 3-day-a-week partner. I'm an appraiser. I've got a job with the CCG and there's a couple of other things, but I should be able to get a day off. So we mapped out her week. We got a big chart and we wrote it all down. And we put in all the admin that was needed with her role, everything else she wanted to do, her activities, all that. And we just looked at her work week plan, okay? And so we put it in something like this. And she looked at it and she said, yes, I appear to be working 13 sessions a week. So she was working sort of 6.5 days a week, you know, if you counted the evenings and stuff like that. And of course she couldn't have a day off. And I think so many of us are doing stuff off the side of our desk and got too many different roles and too many different projects. And, you know, you need to, again, prioritise and work out what is important to you. What are you going to spend your time doing? Because we do make time for things that are really important to us, and then everything else falls by the wayside or we don't do such a good job of it. So what I can encourage you to do is I'm going to make the Thrive Week Planner available to you at the end of the webinar. And it's a simple tool. There's a couple of charts like this and some questions. So one would be, you just fill in your current working week And then you get your second chart and you fill in what you'd like it to look like. You know, what would you like your week to look like? And then just compare the two and you'll get some realizations about what needs to change, what needs to move. Okay. Now, of course, you're never going to get to your complete ideal week because that's going to be very difficult. But even if there's just one or two small changes that you can make, you'll feel the benefit. Right. Take control of your stress. Now, let's just think about how stress affects our performance. You've got high levels of circulating cortisol, which shrinks your prefrontal cortex. That's this bit here. Of course, you know that, you're ophthalmologists. Your human thinking, rational bit of your brain. It's a bit like the RAM of a computer. So you lay down memories, retrieve memories, make decisions, all those sorts of things. But it doesn't just shrink your prefrontal cortex. It shrinks your hippocampus, which is responsible for emotional regulation. So you do become much more labile when you're under stress. And so tearful more quickly, get angry quicker. But the final thing it does, and this is really important, it increases the size of your amygdala. Now, your amygdala is the bit of your brain that detects a threat. So it's your threat detection zone. It will detect a few different threats. It'll detect a physical threat. So if you're just about to be eaten by a bear, it'll detect a hierarchical threat. So if the alpha males are just about to challenge you to a duel, or it will detect a group threat. So when we were living in caves, if the group didn't like you, or they chucked you out of the tribe, then you would probably die of exposure or be eaten by a bear or both. So actually, when we were living in caves, this group threat was really important if people liked you or not. The problem is we haven't adapted well to 21st century living. So we end up having the same response to a difficult email as we do to just if we were just about to be eaten by a bear, right? So I have a friend and she is a mindfulness teacher and she always says to me, Rachel, you just need to be more gazelle. More gazelle? I say, what are you talking about? Well, when a gazelle is eating grass and a lion comes along, what does the gazelle do? Runs away, right? So when the lion is gone, what then happens to the gazelle? Goes back to eating grass. And if that was me, I'd be saying, did you see the gazelle? Did you see the gazelle? Sorry, did you see the lion? Did you see the lion? Did you see its hair? Did you see how scary it was? What if it comes back tonight? And what if it eats my babies? And I'm never going to sleep tonight. And I've got that presentation tomorrow. And what am I going to do? And I'm constantly pre-living and reliving something that hasn't even happened. That's what we all do, isn't it? I think it was Mark Twain that said, I'm an old man. I've known many troubles. Most of them didn't exist. And what happens when our amygdalas flare up? They send us into our fight, flight or freeze zone. And I call this being backed into the corner. You know, you've got three choices. You stay there, you freeze, or you come out fighting, or you just run away. Okay, just those three choices. And we don't behave very well when we are backed into the corner. And I remember once I was on call at the surgery. I had a phone call from my childminder. She said, Rachel, can you come pick up your daughter? Because I've got to take another child to the hospital. It's really important. Please come now. And it was about 5 minutes to six. And I knew the phones went over at six and I'd be safe. And of course, I got a phone call at 5 to 6 with an urgent visit. And it was a lady she lived with her mum. And that morning when she woke up, her mum was really poorly. And this woman had gone off to work. And when she came back, surprise, surprise, mum was still really poorly. So she was phoning for a GP visit. And I got on the phone. I said, well, what do you mean? How dare you go to work? And what am I supposed to do now? And at that point in time, I really wasn't the GP or that really wasn't the doctor that I wanted to be. And I'm sure you can all think of times at work when you behaved in a way that you really didn't want to, and you look back and think, what did I do that for? But it was purely because you were in that zone. You were in your fight, flight or freeze zone. And when we're in that zone, our decisions become very black and white. You know, should I stay, should I go? And it's very difficult to be creative and think outside of the box, which is actually what we need mostly in our job. You know, the only time we need to make very black and white decisions is perhaps in a resus decision, a resus situation. So it's really important for us to be able to recognise when we're there and actually be able to get ourselves out of it. Now, how do we do that? Well, let's go back and do a little bit more neuroscience. So what happens in an ideal world is that something happens, a trigger happens, And then we think about it, we interpret it, and then we respond. Okay. Unfortunately, we don't live in the ideal world. What happens is that there's a trigger and we go straight to our reaction without having time to interpret it. Now, how does this happen? Well, it's because our amygdala, which is part of our limbic system, our ancient emotional brain, it responds 5 times faster than our rational human thinking prefrontal cortex. Okay, so we've gone straight from trigger to have the reaction without even being able to think about it. Okay, and I don't know if any of you have read the book The Chimp Paradox by Professor Steve Peters. Now, he was a consultant psychiatrist. He was also Ronnie O'Sullivan's sports psychologist. Dr. Steve Peters calls this immediate reaction that you have from your amygdala, he calls it your inner chimp. And he says, you can't stop your chimp from coming out because actually our amygdala has been keeping us safe for years. It's our natural brain protective system. So you can't stop your chimp from coming out, but you're 100% responsible for controlling it and managing it when it's out. Okay, so what do we do when our chimps are out? Well, what we need to try and do is put a really, really small slither of time between trigger and reaction in order to do a bit of interpretation. So we need to give ourselves space to think. So we need to firstly recognise when we've been triggered into the corner, then we need to give ourselves some space. Now, I found the best way to give myself a bit of space is possibly go and make myself a cup of tea, or count to 10, or go for a walk. Fiona, in what ways, you know, are you able to give yourself space when you're triggered into the corner?
Oh, Rachel, it's always a cup of tea. Everybody who knows me at work knows that if I want to think, I go and make a cup of tea and then come back and then I'm ready.
Yeah, so I mean, that's your friend. Making a cup of tea is your friend, or a cup of coffee or whatever you like, or going for a walk around the block, or literally counting to 10. I know it's a cliche, but it's really, really helpful. Or, you know, there's very few times, like I said, you have to respond immediately. You could say to the patient, if it's a patient, I need to just think about that and get back to you, or a colleague, can I check my diary and get back to you? Or I'm going to have to give that some thought and get back to you. And, you know, maybe you want to phone a friend to discuss, or a colleague, you know, sleep on it if it's a difficult email before you respond. All these things will give yourself some space and time to just calm down a bit and respond using your human rational brain. And I always think, actually asking yourself, what's the story in my head? What is going on in my head? And I'll just give you a quick example. So I was doing some coaching with a bunch of managers, and one of them said, I'm really worried, I've got to have a difficult discussion with my boss tomorrow. I'm really in the corner about it. And we said, okay, so what's the story? She said, well, yesterday he really undermined me in front of the whole of my team. He sent a message to the rest of my team behind my back. It shows he doesn't trust me. He doesn't think I'm any good, and he wanted to undermine me. So that was a story in her head. And so no wonder she was worried about having a sort of confrontation with her boss. So we said to her, okay, let's just take a step back. What's really true here? She said, well, yesterday I was actually at a conference and my boss didn't want to disturb me. He knew I wanted to be left alone. Oh, she said, I don't think he was trying to undermine me. I think he was actually trying to protect me from being bothered by this project. And yeah, I would have preferred to know about it, but oh, I think he was trying to be thoughtful. Oh, she said, I'm out of the corner. I know how I can respond now, because, you know, he did the wrong thing, but he was trying to protect me. So often we misinterpret things. We assume the worst. We assume that someone's out to get you. And actually often they've had something that happened. So just giving your space and then reframing and working out what the truth is can be really, really helpful. So how else can we reduce the stress? We'll get some help with this. You know, this is difficult stuff. And when we're working in a very, very high pressured environment, like the NHS, seeing patients, seeing people that are sick, working through the pandemic, you know, we can't do this all on our own. So get the help that you need. And I've already mentioned there's a load of resources out there. There's free coaching. There's the health practitioner program if you feel you're really struggling. There's your own GP. There's lots of talking therapies you can go and get. There's lots of apps like the Calm app, like the Headspace app, all these sorts of things that are out there and can help you. And I think it's the bravest thing you can do is get some help with some of this. So that will help you take control of some of your stress. And then finally, as we bring this webinar home to land, take control of your work life. Okay, there are things that you can do at work to make sure that you can thrive rather than just survive. So I'm going to go through those in a sec, but Fiona, just want to pause there. Was there any questions about that previous section or comments that have come in?
Well, we've got a comment particularly about email saying they are the worst thing for your inner chimp, because it's so easy to type, click and have sent it off before you've even interpreted it. You know, something's come in, you've responded instantly. And this person saying, yeah, I've been guilty of that. And then the horrible feeling that you can't undo what you've just done. And I think that's really true. So it's at that point when I've written the email, I go and make the cup of tea and come back and reread it before I press send, because then I always alter it.
Yeah, 100%. I think the longer you can leave it, the better, actually. I often leave it overnight. I also sometimes get my partner to read it as well, because I think it takes longer than we think to calm down. Yeah. We might think half an hour later that we're over it and we're calm, but sometimes just even leaving it overnight. And actually, one of the strategies for managing email that someone told me recently is just always be slow to respond to email, because things don't need immediate response. And the faster you respond, the more emails you'll get back. So if you want to slow down your inbox, just think before replying. And certainly if it's a difficult one, leave it overnight before you hit send, or reply to yourself and make sure you don't put their name in any of the lines. But that's the good thing about emails, that we do have that way of getting time and space. But it's so tempting just to press that send button, isn't it?
And somebody else has asked, how do they access free coaching? Because you were saying there's lots of opportunities out there and the health practitioner program. So asking about that.
Yeah, so that if you're a clinician, then there's the health practitioner health program. If you just Google practitioner health on the website there, and you can self-refer there. If you go to the NHS, I think it's /people website, there's loads and loads of resources there. And I know that there have been lots of offers of free coaching given by lots and lots of organisations through the coronavirus pandemic. So it's, I can't remember what they're called, but if you just Google that, and you'll probably be able to find that, or get in touch with your local leadership academy, local NHS leadership academy, because often they offer free coaching for leaders within organisations. I know certainly the East of England Leadership Academy do. So I'm a coach with them. So there's lots of opportunities. And if you can't access free coaching, then I'd go and pay for some. I mean, it's just, for me, coaching has been, it was just pivotal. I paid for coaching myself and I found it really, really helpful. I don't know if you've ever had coaching, Fiona, and how you found it.
Yes, I had coaching as a new consultant and it was completely life-changing. My coach is still an amazing friend and I feel they made such a difference to me. I felt I knew so much more about myself and how to tackle things, and it was just a marvellous time. So I would echo that. And at the college, we also have a sort of mentoring and buddying lead as opposed to coaching. But again, that's something we want to develop, just as we'd like to develop what we're doing about well-being to support all of the doctors really throughout their career, as perhaps a link to finding some of these suggestions that you're coming up with, Rachel, because I think people don't always know where to access support and help.
Yeah. And if anyone is having trouble finding anything, then my email address will be at the end. Do drop me a line and I'll try and point you in the right direction of that. And there's lots of resources on my website as well, if you want to have a look around there and see what you can find. So I'm just finishing off really about taking control of your work life. OK, because I think, you know, we've already talked about the fact that we feel that we just need to work harder. And we think that if we work hard, we're going to be successful, that's going to lead to happiness. But that's actually not the case. But the good news is that now we know from the research is that happiness leads to productivity and that leads to success. So the great news is if you're happier, then you'll actually be more successful, which is win-win really in all sorts of ways. And so we need to think about everything we do in terms of how much happiness it's going to bring us. And, you know, this guy, Tal Ben-Shahar, wrote a brilliant book, and he's written the most popular course, I think, at Harvard ever, which has been about happiness. And we need to measure happiness. And I'm not talking about touchy-feely, lovely, lovely, happy feeling. It's about satisfaction and meaning and the thing that makes life worth living. So we need to all try and work a little bit happier. I think one thing that can really dent our happiness is when we're isolated and lonely. And there's been a lot of research recently about loneliness, saying that actually being lonely has the health, not benefits, the health problems, as if you would be smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So we know that loneliness causes illness, and you really do need friends at work. And I've heard recently that having a good friend at work adds 7 years to your life expectancy. In 7 years, that's phenomenal, isn't it? And it's so helpful having those colleagues you can connect with. So if you're one of those people that think, I don't need friends at work, I've got plenty outside of work, just think, actually, how can I make deeper connections at work? Because it will build trust within your team as well, which will mean that you make all better decisions together. And it's just really, really important. You need to make some good choices about what sort of work you take on and what you don't take on. And so you can plan your working week using the Thrive Week Planner that I'm going to tell you about in a second. And you need to make some good choices for well-being as well. And maybe rather than reaching for that extra alcohol or chocolate or binging on Netflix to make yourself feel better, there might be some other things you can do, like having a bath or giving a good friend a call or something like that. And then I'm a big believer in being able to do what you love. And Fiona's already talked about this earlier. You know, I think if you play to your strengths, then you will be happier at work. And many of us don't know what our strengths are. But the great thing about medicine and healthcare is, in a large way, we can craft the job that we're in. You know, yes, there's the clinical stuff that everyone does, but to some extent you can sort of choose your specialty and then your subspecialty. But there's loads of other stuff to be getting involved with that will then help you use different bits of your brain, like teaching and training or writing or clinical governance or quality improvement. So if you know what you're good at, work on improving your strengths and doing what you love and diversifying a little bit. And that is really protective for resilience there. And then just finally, connect with what makes life worth living. And I think if there's one thing the coronavirus pandemic has taught us, is that life is precious. And this quote came out at the beginning of the pandemic. I just love it. And, you know, I think it just brings home the fact that actually before coronavirus, it wasn't all a bed of roses, was it? And some of us were slightly relieved when suddenly everything stopped and we didn't have to keep going this complete manic thing of taking the kids here and there and trying to hold down a job and doing this and that. And the quote is, you know, what I'm observing currently is people are fighting for and grieving a life that made them freaking miserable. So in this crisis, don't just pivot, but take the time to evolve the way you're living your life in a more meaningful and a more connected way. And I just ask you, what does that look like for you? What does that look like for you currently? And what will you do differently? Because my hope for you guys is that you are able to feel calmer, to make better decisions and be really successful and thrive in your work and in your lives. So that is the end of the content I'm going to be presenting. But just to let you know, I think they're going to make available to you that the Thrive Week Planner. There's also the Zone of Power download, all about the Zone of Power. If you want to listen to the podcast, you can find it at youarenotafrog.co.uk. And you're very welcome to contact me at any point. There's my email address. And I do have courses for healthcare professionals, e-courses and things like that. If you want to find out anything more, do let me know. So that's everything from me. Fiona, are there any...
Thank you very much. Rachel, I have got a question. And one of the audience has said, do females have more tendency to overthink, perhaps to overreact or take things personally?
Oh, now I'm not sure I'd like to comment. I have observed that I don't think so. I think we all overthink things. I think maybe we overthink different things. I've observed that maybe females feel a bit more guilty about things. They should be, you know, we are told as females that we should look after our families as if we didn't have a job and work at our jobs as if we didn't have a family. And it is still true that the majority of the childcare and the work in the home is done by the female. And that's just a fact. There is still a massive gender pay gap in medicine. It's whopping. So I think there is still a big problem with in that sort of gender equality, inequality. Now, I think, you know, again, men overthink all sorts of things as well. So I think we're all, you know, we've all got amygdalas that stress us out. It just might be about different things, perhaps. What do you think, Fiona?
Well, I think you're right. I think because we think we should be able to do everything as well, we're our own worst critics, perhaps, because of that. And I think that is about the role. But I actually think maybe women find it easier to vocalise that to their friends than men. And so maybe it feels exactly the same. It's just that we feel more able to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, that women do share a bit more, whereas sometimes it can be seen as a sign of weakness with the guys, and they're not quite sharing as much. And we know that connecting is a massive resiliency protective factor. So just encourage you. You know, I think the first thing I would do if you're struggling, go and have a cup of tea with a friend and just chat about it. You know, that's really, can be really helpful if you feel able to do that, because a problem shared, really, I know it's cliche, but it really can be a problem halved.
So I think that we can take control. We can improve how we feel about work now and therefore improve our working life. And Rachel's talked to us about looking at our role, maybe developing ourselves within it as well. Lots of ideas for us to develop ourselves and think about what we're doing. And maybe just we need to take a little bit of time to work through some of those examples she's given us. And that's something that then you could expand to your team and could affect how you feel about your workplace. And all of this is going to ultimately benefit your patients. So when we were talking about what makes you connected to what's really important, I think that's something that drives a lot of us. So it will make a difference to our patients too.